Hello, everybody, and welcome to the October 2017 Q&A episode of Weekly Manga Recap. I am Nick, here with Chris, and we got some questions we're going to answer for you guys. There's also some questions that we may ask you.
Questions we might have. You ever play the game Kings, Nick?
No.
It's a card game. It's a drinking game. With the idea being that you basically just play cards, and whenever you get like a king, you get to make up a rule for the table.
Oh, fun. And that you got, I assume you've got to remember all the different rules while drunk.
Yeah, right. We got to remember all the rules. And the one my brother always used to put was the talk like Yoda rule. So you had to do like every fucking conversation you have. Like, turn yours is. Play card now, you should. And he's like, everyone fucking hated me at those parties because it was the most annoying rule to have to follow.
Well, especially if you've got, you know, a bunch of, you know, alcohol swirling around your brain. Turn yours is now is yours.
Time now for us, it may be. God, whatever. Who cares? Yeah, well, what are you going to do? I still think it's worth it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what are we going to ask, Nick? What's the important things we're going to be talking about today?
Well, that depends on our listeners and what they have sent in. I do believe that we have, we're going to actually have answers from them first. Is that right?
Yes! We have answers from our audience. Because last month, guys, we sent out a question, gave it out to you guys, postmarked it, said stamp, sign, deliver this to the audience, and you guys got it. Because we got a lot of really great responses in. And that was, if you could make a TV show based on characters from manga, what show would you make? And this was super open-ended. You could make anything really out there. You could make it as legitimately serious or as silly as you wanted. We got a lot of great answers. I don't have time to read all of them, but I wanted to read off just a few that we got here. So from Emperor DN, he says, for my take on a Netflix spinoff series, I will go with a Netflix movie based on a joke I made with a friend shortly after watching Birdman, that being called Fairy Girl or Fairy. This is a movie that focuses on Kana from Fairy Tail and becomes a surreal art house film where it becomes a deep character study of Kana's alcoholism and father issues and how it affects the way she sees the world around her and realizing that she is forever condemned to be the skimpy fan service barmaid in a world where everything runs on sex and friendship. Think Birdman meets BoJack Horseman.
There is a lot to go with there.
There is a lot to that.
Well done. There is something there.
No one will ever make it, but they should.
That's amazing. Well done.
We got one here from Dragon Trainer who says, hey, Nick and Chris, I would take the cast of Food Wars and put them in a Hell's Kitchen-style reality TV show, and yes, Gordon Ramsay would be the main host. And yes, the main cast dishes cause the same kind of reactions in the show as they do in the manga. The editing department was given an enormous budget to work off of.
And there's a whole bunch of sound effects like,
yeah, Wilhelm
scream. I actually love Hell's Kitchen, so.
They said only the first year, so the cast will be contestants. The second and third years, so the council 10 will be either guest judges or the sous chefs. And the players dorm members, except for Soma and Megumi, will be the first ones eliminated. Daigo and Soji got eliminated on day one. Erido would be the one claiming that she's there to win, not make friends. Alice gets eliminated for making a completely different dish than the one she was supposed to. Subaru gets eliminated for taking his impersonations too far. And Soma would be constantly up for elimination for making his disgusting experiments, but ultimately make it to the final round.
So Soma would be the underdog, but Ariana would be the favorite going into the finals kind of deal.
Yeah. I don't know how they got to that point.
Megumi would somehow make it into like the final five and prove that she belonged after being bullied constantly by Chef Ramsay.
Exactly. She'd be that undercard character for a really long time. And then at the end of it, everyone's like, you know what? She was a pretty cool dude when you get right down to it.
Who would be the most, like, because every single season of Hell's Kitchen, there's one or two absolutely insane, what the fuck are you even doing here contestants.
Who's that chick who just makes nothing but disgusting food?
Yeah, she could be one.
Maybe Kurokiba, but he never takes off the headband, so he's constantly
screaming.
Oh, so
he never gets to show his potential.
So he's constantly, like, fucking going all over the top.
That would have to do it. You know, there was a guy who actually, like, threatened to fight Ramsay in the middle of the taping one time.
That's fucking great. I love the notion that someone could get that agitated by a dude who's clearly like a TV personality. Like,
well, he was two things. One, he was like some sort of like douchebag New Yorker. And two, he was like former military with a chip on his shoulder. So he thought that he was better than everyone because of that. So, you know, yeah, Ramsey did his usual shit with him. And it was really funny because the guy was just like, you want to go right here, man? He just, you know, throwing all this stuff down. Ramsey's like, you're a fucking child. Leave.
Get out of here.
I mean, you know, the guy is like, you know, 6 inches taller than Ramsey or something like that. But Ramsey's like, I have security here, so I know I'm fine.
Yeah. what are you going to do, though, you know?
Oh, boy. I should go. In that show. I used to love that shit.
I got the one here from Campy who says, I thought it'd be interesting to put Emma Ray, Norman, Gilda, Don, and whoever the next oldest kid is into a reimagining of It. I feel it'd be interesting.
Forget that next oldest kid. Just put Phil in there with
them. Yeah, Phil in there. I feel it'd be interesting putting them in a different setting with a different supernatural enemy who can only be defeated through their wits and belief. It'd be especially interesting to see how hashtag Ray deals with the same changing cloud
so it's
monster.
Not Ray, it's hashtag Ray.
My
Pennywise had the best nightmare fuel.
Exactly. Oh my god. He's fucking basic people. Oh no. They're all people without baby memories. He's a monster.
Oh man.
And the last one we got here, this is two from Loon Rama Yasha. The first one I just want to mention because it reminded me of something I completely forgot about. That's great. They said, I thought it'd be fun to make a Survivor-esque parody with Shonen Jump characters, something kind of like those old Stay Longer bumpers on Cartoon Network.
Yeah.
I completely forgot about that, which was where they had like a Survivor parody where it was all the cartoon characters against like the Hanna-Barbera characters. Right.
The winner.
And I just fucking love that, like, at one point, it's just like Chicken who's just like, yo, you've been voted off a long time ago if I can remember how to spell Eustace. and he's saying he'd put in, like, Vegeta, Bakugo, Rei, Erida, Hyosei, Sarada, like, all the most, like, antagonistic characters.
The ones that have the least social skills.
All of them who are just so combative. His other thought was watching Dragon Ball Super has reminded me of how hilariously slimy Frieza is, especially when he's pretending to be a good guy. Therefore, I'd want to make a family sitcom parody titled Frieza Knows Best, where he has to take care of children, and teaches them all the wrong things through his murderous and mean-spirited ways.
There were a British sitcom that was about Hitler and Eva Braun, and that it got canceled before the first episode was finished airing.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. Heil Honey, I'm Home. Yeah.
Yes!
It was horrendously bad.
It'd be one thing if it were actually funny.
Yeah, you'd think it has potential, but then it just doesn't, you know? Oh, dear. So, yes, those are our answers there. So, we got some really great answers there. Again, sorry if I couldn't read yours. We got tons of really good ones, but...
that's some stiff competition. Those are all really good ones, so...
Yeah. For a question for you guys for next month, I wanted to keep things, just a little bit simple because we got, some really good answers on this one, but I think maybe we can, throw in, an interesting one this time with a simpler kind of topic, which is what's like your favorite technique that's been used in a manga, like a battle manga or something like that? Like what's that one technique you gotta go to and you're like, man, if I could learn that, I would be so happy because that looks so cool. Just that first one that comes to mind. Send us your thoughts on that. Let us know why that one sticks out to you. Doesn't have to necessarily be your favorite, I guess. Just maybe one that sticks out to you the most.
Mm.
And it could be from anime as well. Don't have to restrict yourself just to manga. Go back as far as you want, however you want to do it.
Okay. And we have questions for each other?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm not just coming up with them completely on the spot here.
I'll go first. Don't worry about it. So I have been moving a bunch of my stuff lately because I moved into my new place. And one of the things that I had to pack and then unpack was a bunch of my old books that I've had for, you know, like 20 years or something like that. And so something occurred to me as I was seeing a bunch of these, you know, like series that I read when I was in middle school and high school and stuff. They're like, oh yeah, there was that thing. And so that leads me to my question, which is there a book or a book series that you are disappointed never got more popular, never entered the mainstream mindset the way that, you know, series like Goosebumps or Harry Potter did, where they blew up and became this big media franchise that everyone knows about now?
I'm trying to think. The closest answer I could say did technically have a lot of success. It just didn't have a lot of mainstream success, I think, in America. And that's, Del Toro Quest.
Mm.
It actually has like an anime in Japan and things like that.
Really?
I think there was actually talk at one time to even try to make it into a movie franchise. Just never got those legs, but it was a very video gamey.
Del Toro Quest is a Japanese anime series based on the series of children's books by the same name written by a straight. Wow. Huh.
Yeah. It's weird that like it was popular over there, but not here, but, It always felt like a really fun, kind of cool premise to me to like just work into it. It was very video gamey, like collect these gems. All these gems have cool powers. They're all guarded by bosses and these are like, you know, unique environments. It was a very cool franchise like that. It was one of those few that like I discovered apropos of nothing. There was just a Scholastic book sale. I went in, saw like the cover of it. I was like, ooh, this knight dude looks pretty cool. I'm going to go check this out. Forest of Silence, you know?
That was the best way to discover new books as a kid.
Yeah. And really dug it off of that. So I guess Del Toro Quest. But again, I'll preface it by saying it did have a lot more success, I think, outside of America.
There was a series that I read when I was younger called The Seventh Tower. And I totally understand why it didn't get bigger than it did. But I wish it had. So.
Oh, sorry. Was that your entire
answer? Yeah,
okay.
You're done stalling.
No, I got it. So I mentioned previously about Riverdale. And that got me kind of thinking about the various CW shows. And I've started watching Supergirl again, and I'm kind of getting into it again. I want to like Supergirl more than I ultimately do, because I think it's a really cool concept to like not have a Superman show out there, but a Supergirl show. And you just basically help kind of adapt many famous Superman storylines to give her new ones while also adding original stuff. It's kind of a cool way of doing things. But Nick, if you could see any superhero character or team or something like that get their own like live action show, what kind of show would you want to see?
What kind of show?
Or what character would you want to see get a show or team? Live action show. It has to be like a live action show.
That's a tricky one.
That's what I do. I drop the tricky ones on you.
Well, I had one pop into my head right away, so I think I'll just go ahead and stick with it and say Spider-Girl.
Okay, yeah, no, I totally get that.
You know, everyone's already familiar with Spider-Man, but I think that doing the same kind of thing with a different character, I'm sure that nowadays people will be like, well, what about Spider-Gwen? Because I didn't grow up with that one, so fuck you. Very much was basically just an adaptation of a bunch of the old Spider-Man stories in a new context. And I think that having a different character, would allow you to do kind of the same things differently and get away with it, because everyone knows, you know, the Spider-Man origin story and stuff like that. Everyone's familiar with a bunch of Spider-Man's various villains. Like everyone knows, for example, who the Green Goblin is. Dr. Octopus, that kind of thing. But if you do a different spin on them, then you can kind of do whatever the hell you want. And you're allowed to get away with it while, you know, of course, Marvel Films does all the big stuff with, you know, whatever actor they're going to have playing Spider-Man for, you know, the fifth time in the last 20 years. So
it's going to be Andrew Garfield forever, Nick. We're never going to lose him. Never going to happen.
All right.
Yeah, I can dig it. I enjoy that answer. I think at this point I'm pretty kosher with most of the stuff that's out there, but there is a part of me that would like to see them at least attempt a Teen Titans live action show. It would never match the cartoon, just because the cartoon was able to, you know, do so many other things with animation that are going to be very hard to replicate with special effects, and I already seen how Legends of Tomorrow does stuff with, like, a lot of special effects, and it's basically like, hey, Firestorm, you're all special effects, so you're on the ship this episode, and next episode, and the next four, you're gonna be in the season finale, you get to show up and throw fire. Very briefly. So I'm like, I feel like Raven wouldn't get a whole lot to do, or Starfire, or Beast Boy. You know what? It would just be Cyborg.
It would just be Robin. It would just be Robin and a guy wearing a bunch of metal on parts of his body.
Holy shit.
Never shooting his cannons, just punching stuff.
Have you seen the image for Cyborg, Superman, and Supergirl? I've talked about him before and how, like, stupidly, like, hammy he is. Like, he, like, literally will burst into rooms and just shout out, I'm Cyborg, Superman. But the way they made him Cyborg, Superman is to just put a shitty, like, the Kano style, like, steel plate on the side of his head, and it doesn't, like, it clearly just looks like a piece of fucking plastic they stuck over this dude's face, and they're like, there you go, he's a robot. It's embarrassing. I'll pull up a picture of him while we get started here.
Oh no, Hank Henshaw.
Yeah, Hank Henshaw. Are you seeing the picture?
No. I just know who Hank Henshaw is. What a weird story he's had in comics in general.
Yeah, they didn't do him so great. Let me just see here. I feel like this, here's a good shot of it to show you how bad this is. Cause some will make it look like they tried, and they actually tried to, like, make it look like it's, like, embedded into the skin. But from the image I just sent you, you can see other times they're like, nah, just stick like a fucking plastic metal thingy over his face. That's it. That's it. That's all he gets.
It looks like he went to a really, really, really bad Halloween store and bought the cheapest Phantom of the Opera mask he could find.
Then he put up like a cheap LED light behind it because he's like, well, that'll mean I'm a robot. And he was done. He was done with this costume at that point.
I guess also in this version, Hank Henshaw is not supposed to be able to pass as being Clark Kent because...
No, this dude looks nothing like Cyborg Superman, so I don't know why he calls himself Cyborg Superman. I think it's supposed to be he's as strong as Superman, but that doesn't give him a reason to call himself Cyborg Superman.
Oh, God.
Also, it's weird that he refers to himself as Cyborg Superman as his name and doesn't give himself anything else. Like, it's just, I'm Cyborg Superman. Like, it's really a title more than a name.
Because
you have an actual name.
Well, in the comics, the entire point was that he was pretending that he was Superman. You know, like, cause Superman was dead, and so it was like, no, I am back. I have been reconstructed with Kryptonian technology, but it wasn't really Superman. So it was like, he called himself Superman. It's like, oh, okay, well, what's his real name? We'll call him the Cyborg. And then it's just like, Cyborg Superman just became an unofficial title for a long time. So he's like, I'm Cyborg Superman! Anyway, we've got a bunch of questions to answer.
Yeah, we got a lot of questions to get to. We'll touch base with that a little bit later.
Alright, do you want to start things off or should I?
You want to start off, that's fine.
This is the one that comes from Weechimotsu. It's a bit of a long one, and I will say right up front, I did not answer every part of this. It begins thusly. You're a captain of your own pirate crew. Do you have a devil fruit or not? It can be made up or existing. Are you a human or non-human race? And how do you fight? Then you choose 6 fighters and 6 supports, and there are various rules for who you can and cannot choose to be part of your crew or group. I did not do 6 fighters and 6 supports. I just chose 6 crew members. Sorry. But we've answered various aspects of that before, but not in combination with the what kind of powers do you have, what kind of devil fruit do you have if you have one, so on. So I came up with the Banfu Banfu no Mi, which has the power of teleportation.
Ooh.
And so you can imagine I teleport around, running away like a coward.
Bye, everybody.
Using it to get into advantageous positions and use my badass martial arts to punch people. Yes, that's it. That is what I do.
Yeah, because you're a big tough fighter And you want to show off how tough you are.
I have muscles on. I have pecs for my pecs.
Muscles on muscles. Your entire body is like a trunk of knotted muscle.
I can't actually move very effectively, so I just use teleportation to move.
You teleport around, you're like, still can't move. Teleport around again. Still can't.
Damn it, if only I could get momentum going with this ability. For my crew, I have, as my swordsman, Baron Tamago.
Okay. Alright, yeah. I can dig it.
Sniper Gladius from the Doflamingo crew. Okay. Because he was actually their sniper, apparently. Cook, Lola. Dr. Kureha, because she knows what the fuck she's doing. She's lived forever. Clearly she knows what she's doing.
Obviously, yeah.
And a navigator, Beppo, from the Heart Pirates, the bear.
Is it just because there's only like two fucking confirmed navigators in the history of One Piece?
There's not very many navigators, so I can take a bear.
You're like, I could take Nami, or I could take a talking bear.
Well, there are more than that, but I was like, fuck it, bear.
I mean, yeah, he's pretty sweet. So I did go with the 6-6, but I don't know. You could probably argue some of my support picks aren't support picks. I don't know. I also have a very eclectic
group. I can just have more fighters.
Well, I also have a very eclectic idea of what, like, my fighters should be. You'll see in a moment. But if I were to give myself Dove Fruit, I've always thought that one of the really cool ideas, I'm surprised Oda never did, was the Kami Kami Fruit, the paper fruit. Because it just seems like a really cool idea to go with, the idea of, like, if you are able to fold yourself like a piece of paper, acting kind of like the practice of folding steel, you fold your, like hands really, really like continuously to get like a sharper blade off of it. You can also like fold yourself into like a tiny little paper airplane to fly around in, or like fold, like go like two dimensional and just slide underneath the door. It just seems like a fun devil fruit. I would also be an awful captain, so this crew falls apart immediately. But my fighters, I have, Kabaji as a swordsman. I have, Jin as the first mate, cause he was a very responsible guy, and I assume he's only gotten more responsible if he's not dead. Jesus Burgess is my helmsman. I got Gidatsu, the, monk from Skypiea, as our monk slash priest. Scratchman Apu is the musician, and, Lucci is the martial artist slash Zoan Fruit user. Those are my fighters, and there's a bit of a big range between them when I'm like, yeah, I have like Scratchman, Apu, and Lucci, and also Kabaji, you know, like all equally tiered fighters, right? For my support, I have, Polly as the shipwright, Aladdin as the medic, that was the, mermaid from, Jinbei's old crew, the Fishman Pirates, mm-hmm. essentially. Zio, the, Wobbegong Fishman, I believe, who could basically like blend with his environments. He's kind of like the stealthy dude. I just put Usopp in because I wanted like
just because Usopp.
Yeah, got him in there. Then I have Bartolomeo in there for defense and moral support, and then Perona in there for negative moral support. Like if the crew's too happy, then she can come in and be like, guys, let's turn this down a notch. So it's a good kind of balance.
I shipped him now.
Yeah, I know, right? Think of what the kids would look like.
Oh, God. The giant eyes with the sharp teeth.
Giant, flamboyant, pink and green hair.
Oh, God.
We're also called the Super Awesome Fun Time Pirates.
Oh, okay.
So that's our pirate crew name.
It sounds fun.
So hopefully I followed the rules on that. I don't think I even had a Lugia pirate in there, but I know my team loses to like any other team because I didn't really balance it for that. I just picked characters I liked. So,
man, whatever.
There you go. But I like that question. It's fun to like think about like kind of gathering different characters from a world as populated as One Piece.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So thank you for that. We've got questions here from Campy who says, Dear Y Dragon Ruler of Time, and Rollo Card Cartier?
They're both Yu-Gi-Oh! References. Dragon Rulers were a super broken set when they first came out, and Card Cartier was I think immediately put at one a deck. So,
So
it was basically a really easy way to draw cards. So,
gotcha. How are you two doing? I hope you're having a pleasant 2021 so far. How crazy is it that Jerry Springer is president now? I, you know, First and foremost, it's been a very tumultuous 2021 thus far, I'll say that. But, yeah, I'm shocked because Jerry Springer wasn't even really relevant before this either. it's crazy. Question. First one. What is the best romance subplot you've seen in the Battle Shonen manga? What made it compelling and what did the author do so differently to ensure you remain invested? So, I think probably one of the better ones I've seen. I mentioned before, I like the one in Rape Master quite a bit. I guess maybe just because it felt a little bit more genuine and earned at the end of it, and the two actually kind of felt like they became a real couple as opposed to like a lot of other series where it's like, oh, last chapter time. All right, these two people paired off or whatever. So I liked it that I think one that maybe I undervalue a little bit, and maybe it's because it just didn't get to completion, was I'm forgetting the name, but the two leads from Siren, I think was kind of a unique one too.
Hmm. I honestly don't remember that one particularly well.
Yeah. I want another answer besides fucking Rave Master for this.
Kazuki and Tokiko from Busarenkin, because Nobuhiro believes that his lead should live together happily ever after and follows through on that shit.
That's true. I guess I could say Kenshin and Kaoru.
The other one. It was Kaoru.
I'm so close, though. I was so close. Give it to me, please.
It was Kaoru.
All right. So, yeah. Second question here. If an American superhero comic from DC or Marvel was adapted to a manga, which character would you like to see, and what changes do you think they would need to make in order to make a serialized manga adaptation continue in a Shueisha magazine? I think the easiest would be Spider-Man. I mean, regardless of the failed Spider-Man manga attempt, the premise though of Spider-Man as a kid hero and one who has such an eclectic and memorable like rogues gallery, I think would probably be the easiest to work with. And there's a lot of storyline potential in it. You can still show him as a character who grows and learns his powers. Like, I'm just trying to think of like who's popular enough and has like an expansive enough mythos to like sustain a long running shonen series. But, I think he works better than maybe like a Batman who would probably just be too slow and cerebral of a series, and Superman, which would just get boring really quickly.
We'll go with, X-Men.
Oh yeah.
I know that there's actually been like an X-Men anime and there is knowledge of that series over there because I think that they actually ran the 90s series over in Japan dubbed. And I think that there's a lot to work with there because there's a very wide cast of characters. You could come up with your own unique lineup, use it as an opportunity to actually introduce a few characters, original characters. I mean, did you know that like Spike from the X-Men Evolution was actually created for that cartoon?
Yeah.
And it kind of showed it to begin with because he fucking sucked originally.
I was bummed when he left the show, though. I was like, oh, come back. They want to help you.
And then he came back and he was a super badass. It's like, oh, okay.
I barely remember. The last season of X-Men Evolution is a real blur to me at this point, unfortunately.
It's a very bizarre one. Like, honestly, like the entire first season of X-Men Evolution is weird and disjointed, and then by the time that they made the second season, it was a lot better. But then it was just like, oh, the cast keeps changing in the third one.
Well, it got to that point in the third season, because I think the second season's the one that ends with, like, Apocalypse, and he has, like, a four horsemen group. And it's essentially just like, here are popular mutants we didn't put in the series. It's like Gambit and Colossus and shit.
Shows up,
and yeah. You're like, okay. And then, like, a season or so later, they're just like, and we're just going to do like a Gambit episode. Is he part of the team? No. Is he going to join the team? No.
No, but he's got, you know, comic backstory with Rogue, so he's got to have an episode with Rogue.
Yeah, he's got to. I think I have to have mentioned this on the show at some point, but to this day, the first season finale, or I guess it's the penultimate finale, where they have like the fights to determine the strongest mutants or whatever, I will never understand why Shadow Cat lost to the Blob simply because she phased through him and felt gross. What would you feel gross by? Nothing. No matter of his touch, George. You were literally intangible.
There's some really interesting stuff with that show, though.
Yes.
Anyway.
I like that a lot. Third question here. New Yu-Gi-Oh! Anime series involves card games on surfboards in virtual reality. What is the next ridiculous thing players will ride on while playing children's card games after the season is over?
Heelys where the wheels are fidget spinners.
Oh, shit. I don't think I can come up with anything better than that. That is pretty top-notch fucking next
level. And hashtag rise the main character.
I actually have added a color game than Yu-Gi-Oh! I thought Yu-Gi-Oh! Was too simple. I wanted something more complex. Mine has four pendulum boards.
The Gathering instead.
I feel like he'd be pretentious. Like, he'd be the one who's just like, I play Yu-Gi-Oh! On a Magic the Gathering board.
You guys just aren't on my level. We're gonna play the Pokemon trading card game instead.
Right, the Pokemon trading card game sucks. It's not balanced at all.
Play the Digimon trading card game.
No one plays the Digimon. It's not real anymore.
Nobody knows how that game works.
People bought the cards once and then were like, these aren't even fun.
I don't
fun.
Like how you have to have these like three different like levels of defense and attack. It's stupid.
Yeah, they're like, this is awful. I don't even play Pokemon cards.
I just want to have my Digimon digivolve into each other. Oh, hey, look, Hercules Capitarimon. I wonder what that's about.
Ooh, that's pretty sweet. Holy shit.
I can't wait for that to show up in the anime.
Oh, any moment
years
now.
Years later.
And fourth and final question, a list question. How would Ray from the Promised Love Neverland describe the other series?
Nice transition.
Yeah, describe the other series currently in the recap lineup. Which would be his favorite, aside from his own series, and why?
I think we're going to need to just kind of go back and forth on how he would describe the other series, but I can tell you right away, I'm pretty damn sure that his favorite series would be Dr. Stone.
Oh, yeah, because it's all about science.
Well, it's not just about science, but it's about one really super smart guy in a world of uneducated people.
He's like, it's basically my life story, except I'm much handsomer.
I would have also been able to count down over second by second across the course of multiple millennia.
I wouldn't need to actually have to do that counting because my baby memories would have retained it all. Ray, you're not a baby anymore. You can't just rely on that. You have baby memories. You don't have photographic, super amazing memories. Like, I have a lot of things. I have special memories.
It's part of the starting package when you have baby memories.
It's part of the hipster Ray pack. My hero, it would be, you basically describe it as like a bunch of people who have cool powers, but none as cool as having baby memories, fight crime together. And
he would be confused by Black Clover because there would be all these arrogant people, but they don't have the baby memories, so what do they have to be arrogant about?
Or the series acts negatively towards all these arrogant and cool people and always talks about the peasants. He's like, why? They're not special. I'm special.
I could be a peasant too if I really wanted to.
Food Wars is about a super cool school where people make super fancy food that's all very delicious, and then they get orgasm, and that's hot.
it's like his porn.
Yeah, it's just like, I love it. It combines the two things I love. Breasts and food.
So, I didn't realize that you had such base urges, Ray.
Why? I have all my base urges. That's why I have to, that's why I have to indulge upon the most finest of those two urges. She's like, I don't think a manga about food is the top quality of food or porn.
You just don't understand.
Oh, Emma, my sweet little stupid lamb, you. One day I'll learn.
And then we never learn. He would just be horrified by.
Yeah.
But to stupid people who don't understand that, he doesn't understand why they even need to study.
He's like, can't you just answer all those questions? Aren't you just innately a super genius?
Everyone that I know is a super genius, not just me.
I mean, I'm smarter than everybody else.
Like, the baseline literally is IQ 145.
Even Fatty fucking Cookies over there still manages to put up a pretty good score. He's still got like a 3.8 GPA. Yeah, I think that One Piece is, I don't know, what would Ray like One Piece? I think he would say, I used to like One Piece, and then it got fucking
it got popular.
Yeah.
Ray, it's been popular since literally before you were born. It was the highest selling manga in the history of manga since before you were born.
I liked it before it got big. That's literally impossible. Not for hashtag Ray, it's not.
All right.
So thank you for the questions, Campy.
Okay, this is going to be a bit of a trip here. All right. This comes from the Woodworkers Alliance.
Oh, they finally got contact with
us. Finally got to us. Dear Nick and Chris, neither of who are doing God's work as woodworkers. So, we finally speak, the rivals of our illustrious alliance of woodworker podcasters, Nick and Chris. We have our spies listening to each of your podcasts in order to ensure you are not slandering our wondrous craft, though they have been instructed not to write a review, as that would undermine our efforts. We are not worried about being overtaken, but we noticed a slight uptick, if you will. So, we have crafted a list of questions designed diligently and purposefully, like a fine table of mahogany, to understand those who would wish to fill our alliance.
I love how clearly this person put so much time into creating the fake alliance.
It's the Woodworkers Podcast Alliance.
That's true. I'm very proud that the Woodworkers Alliance was so dedicated to their cause that they actually created the Woodworkers Alliance email account.
Whoever you are, Woodworkers Podcast Alliance, amazing. First, from Alder, how does it feel knowing you will never overtake our numbers of listeners? I don't know. You'll have to tell us that.
It shames me every day.
Second, from Balsa, do you own any wood furniture? Is it handmade? If not, you simply do not understand our craft and should be ashamed.
My desk is wooden, but I don't think it's handmade. I mean, it came from a factory in Sweden.
Factory, let's see, my armoire. Well, let's see, I think that my bedstand might be hand carved. No, it can't be because all the parts fit together super easily and you can take it and disassemble and stuff. So I don't think any of the stuff that I own is handcrafted. There's some really nice finish on some of the older pieces of furniture I have though. From Cedar, your silly comics are usually printed on paper. Do you even know what kind of tree is usually used to create the parchment?
Parchment? Tree? Is that a tree?
Is it parchment anymore?
Is it the talking tree from the Pocahontas movie? Is that the kind of tree?
Just screaming as she's doing it.
Ow! 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 I hope you enjoy this fucking comic, you cocksuckers! Ow!
From Dogwood, how does it feel not being a woodworker? Pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
This is a concept we can simply not understand. It must feel dirty with your soft, uncalloused hands. From Ebony, we will admit your banter is humorous. Make more wood jokes.
Once Kirishima comes back in, we can talk about maximum hardness again. That's kind of a wood joke.
That's a little bit, that's close, yes. Yeah. From Fur, do you believe woodworking would make a good subject matter for a comic? What kind of comic would such a subject matter look like? Not that we care about your opinion of anything. I think that we've actually answered this question before.
I think we have talked about, what the woodworking podcast
is. Ask your spies about it. They'll have answered, heard the answer before. From Gum, our favorite hero in My Hero Academia is Kamui Woods. Who are your own? Purely for curiosity's sake, of course.
Oh, Kamui Woods, yeah, for sure.
Out of the pro heroes that we've seen, I actually really like Gunhead, Uraraka's instructor.
Gunhead is pretty dope. Gang Orca, though, is also right in there.
And I was talking with my Star Wars RPG group, Mega GM and War on the Wind, Sonic Gav, and Eric. and we were talking about My Hero Academia a couple weeks ago, and they basically asked me who my favorite like pro hero was, and I was like, I can't tell you guys who it is because it was Gang Orca. It's like, I don't want to spoil it. He hasn't shown up in the anime yet.
You don't know what he looks like yet, and I don't want to spoil it because
say anything about him or else I'll ruin it. And then lastly from Hickory, list questions seem to be tradition for your podcast, so we suppose that we'll oblige. Which wood carving tool would be the favorite of each protagonist from the series you recap? I don't know anything about carpentry tools.
Ron Swanson.
Asta's would be a hatchet.
Yes.
That's all I know.
There we go. I think we nailed it.
We have actually seen him use a hatchet, in fact, in the series. We are not friends, nor are we enemies. We are simply rivals in the podcast production industry. So we wish you the best of luck in your endeavors, and we'll continue to monitor your progress forward. But we will crush you in the end. Sincerely, Woodworkers Alliance. That was a wonderful. I really loved that. Thank you much. The next one comes from Raxus.
Okay. So from Raxus says, Dear Nick and Chris, I can't think of a funny thing for that. I am sorry. Well, you are forgiven. My question is this. If you could turn either the Wyrmwood campaign or the Shadowlands campaign to a manga outside of personal preference, what one do you think would make them more successful manga and why? So for those of you who are listening who are not sure what that's about, the Wyrmwood campaign and the Shadowlands campaign are two D&D podcasts that Nick and myself are not podcast campaigns that Nick and I were a part of that were streamed. So they have people who have seen the whole catalog of them, and they were two separate campaigns with two different groups, DMs, things like that.
And in one campaign, we ended up becoming lovers, and in the other, we were siblings. And yes. We're not lovers.
Oh,
not, let's get that out of the way.
Not in that one, no. I think it would have been illegal, too. Derek
was 15? 16, and Kana was in her early 20s, I think.
Either early 20s or very late teens. I can't remember. It's been a while. To the question, I believe Wyrmwood might end up being the more successful one, if only because I think there was a more conclusive ending to it.
It's true.
I think we at least got to, like, the major antagonist being completed. So there was, like, more built up from there that we didn't get to because the campaign ended. But it did at least have, like, the Act 1 boss defeated, essentially. Although there would be so much, it'd be so hard to explain. Like, how do you, like, explain something like Dothar eating a coffin apple or...
I eat it!
40 minutes of dragon blowjob jokes. Just a lot of...
There were so many weird jokes and bits of fan art built around random out-of-character asides and stuff like that... Even I struggle to remember the context on some of them, honestly.
Yeah.
Now, in terms of... The thing is that they were also very different kind of campaigns. The Shadowlands campaign ended up being considerably more, like, dark and serious. There were definitely some silly moments, especially with, like, Kana constantly destroying Donald, who was Derek's familiar, a disembodied hand. Stuff like that. But there was a lot more angst to it. A lot of, troubled family lives that they had come from and stuff like that. Whereas there was a lot more weird random going around owing to the different, GM styles of our two different DMs. So I think that likely the Wyrmwood campaign would have probably caught on easier just because it had a much more bizarre, memorable sense of humor about it. But I don't know. Sometimes, the more serious stuff just works out better anyway. You know, all entertainment is subjective in quality, so.
And you could just have the manga write the, like, a more conclusive ending.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, thank you for the question there, Raxus.
Yeah, right, cause the rest of it is just an answer. Okay. This next one comes from Andre Golden, which is actually subject-lined, Turbo Question! Which I don't really understand, but okay.
I think it's a theme with his questions because I feel like I've seen several more that also have a theme to the title that have nothing to do with the question inside.
Dear Y, the ruler of Better Call Saul and Fear the Walking Dead T, I've been watching great anthology shows like The Twilight Zone and American Horror Story. So my question is, do you watch and or enjoy anthology shows such as Black Mirror, Tales from the Crypt, and Goosebumps? I personally do not. I actually find them kind of difficult to get into because it's a different story every single time. So,
anything
like that.
Yeah. I love The Twilight Zone. It's still one of my favorite sort of series, especially when they do like that New Year's Twilight Zone marathon. I'll usually pop down for at least a couple hours just to catch up. There's so many like great Twilight Zone episodes. And it's fun to see the ones that like got parodied into like Treehouse of Horror episodes. And then the ones that you're like, why didn't they do this one? Like the one where there's a guy who could trade anything with other people, so he'd be like, I want to trade for your legs, essentially, and you can get my legs, and people will do these shitty deals and things like that. We just always joke that, like, it would be like Homer walking around with, like, fucking, like, Duffman's arms and, like, Dredderick Tatum's, like, chest and shit like that. He just made deals for, like, this weird, like, cavalcade of shit. The best twist is at the end of the episode, he traded away compassion, like, for the father of the girl he's dating, compassion. So the dad just shoots him in the fucking chest.
Well.
It's such a great ending. It's so stupid. But it's like, he's like, yeah, you want to know what you got for your health back? You traded it for my compassion. Kaboom, boom, boom.
I really like the Futurama bit where it's just like, a string of, it's what, the scary door.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Just a string of like five different Twilight Zone twists all in a row.
I've combined.
There's a criminal on the side of the plane. Help me, Vibron. Why should I believe you? You're Adolf Hitler.
I've combined all the most dangerous animals together to create the most dangerous creature known to man. Turns out it's man. I do enjoy them. I did watch some Tales from the Crypt as a kid. It was tough because Tales of the Crypt, like, kind of existed at a time where I was too young to watch it. I would occasionally catch it just because my mom would stop paying attention to how late I was up sometimes, just sitting on the couch. She got very absorbed in television, and I would catch some episodes off of that. So I always enjoyed Tales of the Crypt, particularly how the Crypt Creeper is just like this kind of host of weirdness. And I've heard Black Mirror is really good. I've been hesitant to watch anything beyond the first episode because nothing will beat that first episode for me with the Prime Minister having to fuck a pig on live television. That's a great episode. But I do enjoy anthology shows. Although those ones are a little bit different from American Horror Story. I guess that's also an anthology series. Just the seasons are the self-contained story and then it changes each time. Mm-hmm. All right. Question here from Tropical Blitz. Holy
shit. This one's a bit of a trip. So strap yourselves in, guys.
All right. Hello, Nick, mysterious hero Y. Freeman, and Chris rolling out with the crew in the schoolyard, finding trouble, never looking too hard. Larios, how's it going? First it's praise. Do I need to go through all the praise? No. I appreciate the praise, but I don't want to subject
you to it. We do really appreciate it.
Yes. Here we go. Question for Nick. Nick, now that you seem to be making it in the manga industry by becoming a pundit / critic on a professional level, how do you feel your perspective on these backwards Chinese comics you once began your podcast and writing career on reviewing them has changed? And I don't just mean for the context that obviously time has made you more mature, but how do you feel you've grown in your own abilities to explain your point of view in a more nuanced fashion?
It's actually kind of weird. I'm going to try and answer this in a way that does not sound condescending or arrogant. But honestly, doing this over the course of the past, creeping up on 10 years, has kind of disillusioned me to the process of critical writing. Not in the sense that it's like, oh, this is so bullshit. It's more in the sense that, I don't know, it doesn't seem as mystical or weird anymore because...
Like a schlub like me can do it.
Well, in a way, yes. But, I mean, I understand better what is required in order to do it. But I really kind of don't understand my own ability to do it at the same time. Like, I understand what I need to have, but I could never actually explain to you my process because it's kind of just something that I've just learned to instinctively do. And it's not a matter of like, oh, I did it over practice of doing it and stuff like that. It's something that I was doing because of school. In terms of analyzing, you know, stuff for English class. And so now I just, you know, think of stuff in two different ways whenever I read it, which is I think of stuff in terms of how it's put together and how well it's written. And then I think of it in terms of, do I like this? Does it entertain me? And from there, I put it in, you know, one of four different categories based on if it's good or bad in the one and the other. And then I explain in both categories and that's it. And the act of putting those thoughts into words is really the only real challenge of it. But if I talk about something, I've learned to just kind of instinctively do it, which is why I like doing the podcast so much is that I just kind of talk about it and it comes out naturally. It's a little bit more difficult if I write about it because when I write, I don't just vomit out words like I do when I'm talking, casually on a podcast. I'm very, very particular, and sometimes I fall into the trap of perfectionism and get into a writing block. You mentioned the stuff that I did with ANN a few months ago for the preview guide. It was a lot of fun to do. It was also a lot of work. I had actually planned on taking a week off from work just to take, you know, a bit of time and have a break for myself, and I ended up spending almost that entire week off that I had from work just writing and reading. It was a lot of work, and a lot of it was just the fact that I was just out of practice and having to write that much and having to put out thoughts onto the page that quickly. So If you see me do it again, then
Nick has become a cyborg.
Yeah. It was fun, but it took a lot out of me to do that. So it's a weird thing because, like, I understand what's required of it and I know how to do it in it just kind of comes as second nature. And the main thing that gets in my way these days is not actually a matter of, like, doing the critiquing, but literally just doing the writing.
My question is about sandwiches.
Yes!
Chris, the next question will be considering studying uni, so I figured I'd ask you about that Cuban sandwich you gave such high praise to. In the past, you've gotten theme month suggestions, including one for a food month where you review food-related manga, an Evil's special Patreon bonus episode, which is Food Wars themes where you and Nick go at it, making the best dish, or what have you. So how about it? If plans do happen, either for a food month or the special, that the theme for the dish ends up being who can make the best Cuban sandwich.
That kind of puts me at an unfair advantage because I live in Florida, the home of Cuban sandwiches. So,
but do you like Cuban sandwiches?
I fucking love Cuban sandwiches.
I was like, is that one of those foods Nick doesn't eat? Shit. Yeah, you destroy me in that. I don't even know, like, a good place to even get ham around here. Like, it'd be me going to the fucking grocery store and just getting deli ham from, like, a general, like, chain market grocery store, which is not the best way to start off your Cuban sandwich.
It would be like that one contest in Parks and Rec between, I always forget the character's name, Rob Lowe, and Chris Traeger, right?
Yeah.
And Ron Swanson, where, like, you do all this research, analyzing these various different ingredients and what to do, and then I just walk up and I'm like, I bought a Cuban sandwich from Publix. You can press it or not. Oh, it's delicious!
Oh, it's amazing! I am really hungry for a Cuban now, though. And finally, so this third question here is concerning tropical bean at a crossroads or something. So I'm not going to read this entire thing because I don't want to blast out your entire public situation.
Yeah.
But essentially you're referring to the fact that you are being kind of placed in a situation where you have two big questions in front of you, two paths to kind of take or decide whether or not to make a big risk. And you say you've been taking advice from your family and the only answer they have is for me to follow what you think is right, which isn't exactly helpful to be honest. Hence why I started doing my research and went to about starting asking people my age what they think, including you guys now. So my question to you guys is, when you are or perhaps even have taken such life-changing decisions, what drove you to take the decision that you went with? If you have any general advice for what you think is the best option, let me know. I need to take in as much input to make this decision.
Well, the closest thing that I can have for this is the decision that I made a few years ago to go back to school. Which essentially came down to the fact that I had recently been let go from my previous job and I needed to do something else. I was looking in the classified ads and I saw something listing an accounting position. And I was like, what is that? What does this actually involve? And I looked it up and I was like, that's something that I could actually do. I could see myself doing that, but I have to actually go back to school for that. It was not easy to make the decision to, you know, go back to fucking school after I had spent 4 years earning a degree prior to that. But I realized, like, I'm never going to use this degree that I already have for an actual career. It was literally just something that I got just to finish college. And it was helpful in order to, you know, put it on my resume and get better job prospects than if I didn't have it. But in terms of actually, you know, learning to do something that I was interested in actually doing and wanting to do, I knew that I had to go back and get more stuff. And so when I knew that it was something that I wanted to do, I just went and did it. I don't know exactly how well that relates to the explanation that you give, because honestly, although you've given a pretty in-depth explanation of what's going on, I still don't really know all the details. So I can't really help you out in that regard. But I mean, the only thing that I can say is that if you really want to do something, then you will understand the investment that you need to put in order to achieve that.
So it's, the situation you're in, I could see some parallels to it with the situation that I recently found myself in, which is where I left the state to go back to school and kind of redirect where I was headed. Essentially I was at a place where I had been at the state for about 10 years at that point. And I was at the state primarily because it was a position I was able to get without a degree after my mom's stroke, just so I could make better money. And the state, once you get into it, is kind of like just a comfortable place. It has good benefits, has good pay. But particularly in the area I was at, there was very little progress in it. There was very little, like, advancement to it, and it wasn't a job I particularly enjoyed. And I thought a long time about, like, I should try to leave and go do something else, but I was always kind of afraid to do so because of the security of it. And after a while, I started to realize that all those times I thought about, like, I wonder where I'd be in a year or so if I left now, that I had reached that point then, where I'm like, that was a year ago I thought that, or something like that. I said to myself, like, I'm not any happier now than I was a year ago when I first thought that. And I know really the reality of the situation to be if I choose to just stay at this. And I considered this for a very long time, whether or not to make the decision. And there's still actually some pretty big ones I have to make still that might put me in even more kind of curious situations, I guess. But the ultimate thing kind of came down to, you know, I've been in that position for long enough to know it's not what I want to do. You know, you only get one shot at life, and I felt it was right to take a chance on myself, as I've heard some people kind of put it before. If you believe that you are capable of doing it, you owe it to yourself to give it a shot. But, you know, I'll note, I'm not your best friend, so I don't know every intricacy about you. It's something you got to put a lot of thought into, but I think it is very important to consider, you know, where you're going to be in those years if you choose not to take what might be the more risky situation.
Yeah.
Worst case scenario, you end up blowing people behind a bus station. There's no shame in that. They're hardworking people too, all right?
All right. Let's move on to a more lighthearted affair here from Nuff4. Dear Y Ruler of Time, an occasional gruff paladin, and Rolo T, who got that C because of the amazing tits he had in Draken?
Okay.
I don't really know what reference is for me. I don't know
what the amazing gruff paladin? I don't know what
Draken is. What? Anyway, I've spent a lot of my time with either a lot of free time or trying to put off things I need to do, thus I am constant visitor of TV tropes, and some of it has been on the alignment pages. If you go through the anime and manga sections, you might find a note that says the majority of modern shonen lead characters are chaotic good, and that you hardly ever see lawful good lead characters in shonen series. Since I read that, the only shonen lead to pop that I'd really consider lawful good is Deku from My Hero Academia. And sidebar, I think that I would actually call him neutral good. Yes. The next list will be Naruto, who, despite wanting to become president of the ninjas, was virtually only motivated by attention and had enough desire for change and resolution that he only really qualifies as neutral good. Deku sees the society and culture around him as great, wants to become a force for peace and stability, blah, 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 blah. Here's my question. Are there any other shonen protagonists that you've read, either in current series, past series, or recommendations, that you would consider solidly lawful good? That is a very tricky question, honestly.
Can I note something right here?
Yeah.
In like the pantheon of nerd discussions, alignment discussions are just beneath who would win fights on the most frustrating things to bring up in a conversation. I love the alignment chart, but
the alignment charts are great.
Debating the alignment chart with people is insane because it is so nuanced and not built to be nuanced. Like the alignment chart's like, where do you fall in this 9-square spectrum? And the fact that people are like, well, you could fit the Punisher into just about all of them is like not a reason to argue which one he fits into. It's just meant to give you a better direction for your character. Like, just be like, oh, well, I'm chaotic good. I don't play by the rules or whatever. Like when you, like, the reason this annoys me is because like the notion of like, well, the most characters are chaotic good. It's like, I think Luffy is the only one who fits into chaotic good. Like Asta's neutral good. Soma's neutral good, and Soma's actually probably just true neutral. He doesn't really give a much of a fuck about anyone else but himself. Just like the notion that like neutral good and like neutral evil are like these weird like stepchilds of alignments because they don't fit the extremes for either people to like kind of place people in. I don't know. Like it's just such a long, protracted conversation that I feel like never is going to get anywhere because everyone kind of has their own interpretation of these things.
Mm-hmm. And, I think that also another aspect of it is that with shonen protagonists, a big element for a lot of those battle series is a kind of rebelliousness against the norm that is put into a lot of them. You see with, you know, Naruto wants to, you know, kind of stick it to society. Yeah, you see it with with Asta because, you know, he wants to show all these nobles that he can be good too. There is a lot of conflict that tends to come about between the protagonist and the society that they are even actually trying to assist. And you even see with Deku, you know, he doesn't always do things the right way, because, you know, someone that he cares about is in danger, and so he doesn't follow the proper protocols and procedures in order to go and help them out. And that's how they end up getting scolded after the Stain fight. Uh-huh. So everything is on a spectrum, really. The alignment is more guideline than rule.
Yeah, it's the thing I guess that annoys me is because we try to put every pop culture character into like a part on the grid, and they, not everyone really fits into one spot, mm-hmm. per se, or they change based on things. Like the fact that you can literally take a quote from Batman that fits every spot on the alignment chart basically is kind of proof to that.
That's another problem with it is that, you know, you mentioned that one and also the Punisher one, and that's that over the course of many, many years, people will fluctuate around that based on what they're going through with a different writer or a different storyline.
I like using certain characters in pop culture as good examples of the alignment chart. Like Robin Hood is the perfect chaotic good example to me, and Superman is the perfect, like, lawful
Joker
good.
Is the perfect chaotic evil
one. Yeah. Darth Vader is perfect lawful evil, you know. There's levels to this that those characters fill, but trying to put every pop culture character into one is tough. If you want to know another shonen protagonist that would be lawful good, I think the closest I can think of maybe right now is Osamu. And that might just be because he's basically a government worker, more or less.
That's a really, really fitting one, I think. I mean, that, like, he doesn't really do anything that I think that you can would qualify him as like a rebel outside of, you know, like he wants Zemo to be part of his team and he wants to do stuff, but he always goes. It's not like he hides any secrets from Border or anything.
Yeah.
He always kind of goes through the proper channels and stuff to get shit done.
Exactly. So yeah, I apologize not, by the way, if it felt like I was coming down you. I'm not. Like, the alignment chart is one of those things that I've either been a part of or had to watch people get into long, protracted debates around, and it just frustrates me to no end, because I'm like, it's pointless! You're never going to reach a fucking consensus on this! You are never going to!
Alright.
Alright, this one...
You're actually going to want to go to the one from Kirken.
Yes. Yes, okay. Hello, Nick Golden Kamui of Time, and Chris, it's a team competition! T. First off, I want to say that I began reading Golden Kamui after you suggested in June, so a half year ago. It's awesome, and you guys should totally cover for an episode.
It is cool.
My questions. Question one. Would you ever consider putting up a bonus podcast onto Podbean or iTunes? Maybe after a certain amount of time has passed so that the Patreon wouldn't be redundant. I have a hard time listening to them in the format that they're in right now. So I totally get that. It is a little bit strange because there's no great way to put them into like the RSS feed. I do believe that there might be a way to put prices on certain episodes in some RSS feeds, but it's a little bit difficult. It's something I have been considering, but just haven't really found a perfectly elegant way to do it right now, unfortunately. Mm. One other option was the idea of putting it out on like old episodes out on Bandcamp or something like that, for like a, you know, a small price or something like that, and then making it so you could grab them on there if you were interested. But the issue would still be they wouldn't follow into your like iPod, iTunes, you know, sync list. So it's something I still have to put more research into, and maybe that's something I should put a little bit more, you know, legwork into figuring an exact answer for. Question two, has extra material from the author ever ruined a character, plot, or story from you? For example, I almost stopped liking Whitebeard because Oda revealed in an SBS that he forbade his daughters from fighting in the Paramount War. But then I decided that it was just Oda's BS sexism, and I didn't have to listen to it. Hey, that is a good point, and, you know, that's one aspect of One Piece that you kind of have to begrudgingly accept as an unfortunate part of things. I'm trying to think of like an extra material, though. I'm sure there is, and I'm probably just blanking on it. Yeah, I can't think of a good example, but I know I've heard of them before where someone's like, oh, this character was in there because they're so popular and I love drawing them so often. And you're just like, oh, go fuck yourself. Is that why I have to deal with this dickhead all the time?
The main thing that I would pull is, just the, not so much the extra material itself, but the excuse that fans will throw at you that, oh, that's explained in the extra material. Like, you know, the prominent example from this very podcast is when you're like, oh, according to the chat, there's this book called Unmasked that we have to, no, fuck you!
But Nick,
therefore it doesn't count!
But why is Kara a robot, Nick?
So just because that question is answered in like extra material, people are like, oh no, it is explained. It's like, no, it's not.
And question three, there's a tendency in shipping to disregard unattractive but realistic romantic interest options in favor of attractive but weigh out their options. An example I could think of is that Kakashi is often paired with either A, Iruka, for whom he has exchanged like 5 lines of dialogue, or Sakura, who is literally half his age and his student besides. Whereas Guy could actually be realistically an option, but is uncool and unattractive, so isn't. Any thoughts set general trend?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, just yes?
Yeah, that's the way it is.
that's just the way it is.
And I'm gonna take you guys back, about 12 years.
Alright, let's get in our time machine, Nick. Put your seatbelt on.
We're gonna see some serious shit.
I'm like, Nick, we can stop 9/11. You're like, no time!
Time!
I've gotta tell you about my shipping experience!
This isn't actually shipping experience, it's just my experience in dealing with shippers. Okay. When I was crazy into Avatar The Last Airbender in the mid-2000s, I would edit the Wikipedia articles, that were related to the fandom. And one of the regular issues that would pop up was that these shippers would come in and just insert all of this random speculation about couples that they liked and were like, so there's no proof that it's not going to turn out this way. Da, 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 da. And so it wasn't so much that we would go, you're wrong, so much as we would say, this is all speculation and it's not where this kind of information belongs. Go on a fan page and put this on there instead. And they would pull out these long lists of speculative information along with like perceived symbolism and stuff like that. It was always, always, always Zutara, Zuko and Katara shipping. Because at that point in the story, there had not been a lot of interaction between the two of them, and it had been exclusively with the two of them as enemies. And so they're like, no, see, it's like it's fire and water, and they balance each other like yin and yang. And of course, the real reason that it came all down to was just like, well, it's sexier than Katara and Aang, because Zuko is this scarred, dark guy that, you know, you can fix, and Katara is the only, like, of age, conceivably attractive main female character that you could pair him with. That was the only real reason that they had for it. And they would just invent reasons besides that. And it was just something that I just kind of grew to accept after getting really angry about it for a while. I'm just like, you're wrong though! This is all bullshit! But people are gonna ship where they're gonna ship. And a lot of the times, people's, not necessarily sexual fantasies, but romantic fantasies are just going to be what they find appealing. And a lot of that's going to be aesthetically appealing. You can't stop that. And you're going to see that in any fandom that gets big enough, which is just people just kind of like being drawn to what they think looks and seems and sounds good. And a lot of times that'll be like, you know, like, oh, the bad boy ends up with the main girl or something like that, even though they've got very little to do with each other. So to your point, yeah, I do actually see a lot of, bizarrely enough, Iruka and Kakashi, I guess you could say, like, because they're in the same age range and they're both teachers to Naruto, maybe? And then, yeah, there's a lot of Kakashi and Sakura, which is creepy. But yeah, he has more interactions with these other people, but as you say, guy's not attractive. He's not appealing to that kind of group. So, yes. In short.
All right. Thank you for the questions. We got some good answers out of that.
Alright, next up we've got, more Andre Golden. Dear Betty Cooper, the ruler of time, and Veronica Lodge T.
I don't know what to do. Is Veronica the bad one? Is she like the sexy one?
Neither of them are bad, Chris.
All right, just all right. One of them is the Marianne and one of them's the Ginger. As in, one of them's like the classic girl and one of them's like the, I'm going to fuck your brains out girl.
Veronica is the rich girl. All right,
so I'm going to fuck your brains out girl. Got it. Cool. All right, exactly. We can move on.
Girl that, yeah. I have no setup for my question, so here it is. If you choose to leave in any era of, for the rest of your life, what would it be? And by era, I mean like living in the 80s or 90s or early 2000s.
90s, next question. Everything was perfect back then.
Good Cartoon Network shows.
I got all these amazing shows to watch. The economy's doing great. It's awesome.
9/11 never happened.
I can visit the Twin Towers whenever I want. Simpsons is at its peak.
Oh, no Wi-Fi, though.
Oh, what are you going to do? Who cares? I'll just download porn for 4 hours at a time.
Let's just go on the internet.
I can play Splatterball again.
All right, guys. It's time for Weekly Manga Recap. Good luck downloading this for 5 hours.
Yeah. Good luck helping having any connection to me.
Manga to read. Actually, I'll go ahead and just do the next one, Andre Golden, in the email, okay. Too. Even more Star Wars questions. Dear Why the Ruler of the Empire Strikes Back and Attack of the Clones teeth. I feel really bad for you.
I got a pretty big undercut in that, but what are you going to do?
More Star Wars questions. Number one, who is your favorite Jedi?
I mean, part of me wants to say Qui-Gon Jinn because it's Liam Neeson, but Qui-Gon is really not a good character. I will say I've always been a huge fan, though, of Jolie Bindo from the first KOTOR game. He was essentially somewhat along the lines of being what is considered a gray Jedi, which is like the Jedi you don't really follow one side or the other. And he was also just a cantankerous old man, which made for some great dialogue where, like, midway through his explanation about his life, he'd be like, "Bye, you're not even listening anymore. Shoo, get out of here. Go, go."
I'm going to actually go with Kit Fisto. Who is the tentacled one that you don't really learn a lot about, and he just kind of gets gorfed by Palpatine in that one fight where they try and arrest him, and you don't learn anything about him. But he has some cool stuff and some of the extra material, which leads me to question two. Have you read any Star Wars novels or comics? Yes, quite a few.
No, I have not. I played a lot of the games, but I have not read the books or the comics. I got annoyed because I made a joke about fucking Phasma on Twitter about her being worthless. And people are like, "Well, if you read the comics," I'm like, "I'm not going to read the comics. She sucks in the movie. She sucks, period." I'm like, "But in the comics, they show that she's this, you know, I'm all about me and I'm only here to serve the Empire as long as it serves my own needs. I'm a complete badass." I'm like, good. They should have put some of that in the movie instead of her just giving up the first Empire and then getting thrown down a garbage chute.
Does she die in that? Is there extra material that says how she survives?
But yeah, is there an extra material to find how she got out of the trash and fucking escaped the Starkiller base explosion?
You know, there are like a ton of Star Wars novels that pick up where, you know, Boba Fett getting launched into the Starlight Pit. Leave up was like, "Oh no, because of his Mandalorian armor, it threw him up."
Have you ever watched, this is so off topic tangent, but have you ever watched the Parks and Rec, outtake, or, I guess it's the extended scene where Patton Oswalt explains his idea for that? And it's just like 12 straight minutes of him making up this crazy fan fiction movie of Star Wars Episode 7.
See, Disney has the rights now, so we can do it.
Thanos the Mad Giant shows up.
Question three, favorite bounty hunter. It's going to sound cliche if I say Boba Fett, I know, but honestly, I actually do like a bunch of the Star Wars novels that feature him where they actually do shit with him.
I'm going to say Mandalore. I guess technically Candorous, like the original or... Well, no, Candorous Ordo from Knights of the Old Republic. He's, I guess, slight spoilers. He becomes Mandalore in the second game. It's not really a spoiler in that game, because if you played the first, it's the exact same fucking voice. He's just in a full helmet, and like they reveal it later on, like, "I'm Candorous Ordo." Like, well, no shit. You had the same fucking voice. But I like Candorous Ordo. He was a very cool character. He was like that interesting, "I'm evil, but I'll totally join up with the good guys because it's just basically the most beneficial thing for me at the time.
Also Vorkos Crush. And finally, favorite good guy group between the Galactic Republic, the Rebel Alliance, and the
Resistance.
They
are all the same to me. They are 100% interchangeable.
I'm going to go with the Rebel Alliance just because they actually seemed like they had their shit together.
They actually, I guess, felt what's the Resistance? Is that just the shit
the
from
Resistance
fucking
is
First
just
Order?
The...
Or not I First Order, that... from Rogue One? Is that just...
What the Resistance is from Rogue One, and they were all shit characters, so there you go.
Weren't they just a smaller part of the Rebel Alliance?
They just became the Rebel Alliance eventually, and eventually ended up getting their shit together.
And
of course, as we all know, the Republic were a bunch of fucking idiots who had no clue what was going on. So there you go.
Good times. All right. So questions here from Jack, professional candlestick jumper, Lebrano. Says, Dear Nick, proud member of the Supreme Mustache Society Freeman, and Chris, I can't recall any Yandere relationships other than Future Diary, forgetting that Yokoko and Koichi are a thing in JoJo. Oh, yeah, I guess that is. That is true. You got me on that. Question one. Recently, I found the time to watch Perfect Blue, and despite knowing a lot of what was going on while going into it, I was still on the edge of my seat and reminded myself why I love Satoshi Kon's movies so much. With that in mind, have either of you seen any of his filmography, and would you consider doing one of his films for your next commentary?
No and yes.
Yes, I have the exact same response. Question uno. Since we get enough questions relating to JoJo, I'm going to ask something Pokemon related instead. Nick, from least to most favorite, who are your favorite protagonists of Pokemon Adventure?
Okay, so I only know through the first four generations on this one. So give me a second here to collect my thoughts on this.
Da, 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 da,
Emerald is the least favorite, then Yellow. That's the easy part. My favorite is Gold. I've said that before. I think second favorite would be, I really like Ruby and Sapphire. I think I would put Ruby ahead of her, but I think that I'm going to put Red and Green ahead of them. Then let's see. I'm going off of where green is the male, and blue is the female. Blue, I think that I would put third to last, and that's a huge jump from yellow up to blue. And I didn't actually finish reading the Gen 4, but I do actually quite like Diamond, Platinum, and Pearl. I think I would put Platinum first, then Diamond and Pearl. And I never said Crystal, so I think I put Crystal above them. I know I didn't actually give an actual list all the way through, but that gives you an idea at the very least of where I put them. So I need to know more about Gen 4 basically before I actually slide them anywhere into that list, but I like them quite a lot.
Well,
so I like all the protagonists a lot, just except for Yellow and Emerald. And I really, really hate Emerald. So
question Ichi. I expect Fairy Tully or Fully Tail or whatever Fairy Tail themed related month will be starting soon at the time of running. But before that goes underway, I have to ask, at the end of the day, did Fairy Tail have a worse ending than Bleach did?
No.
No, generally speaking, no, it didn't. It ended dumb mood, but... It ended on its own terms.
We read that and was like, that seems about right for Fairy Tale. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, you know what? At the end of the day, this is probably about as perfect of an ending as Fairy Tale was going to get. He just punched it really, really hard.
That's not actually a question from Andre Golden. So let's just go over to Kenny Varnes. Dear Yama, ruler of the underworld, and Rolo Thanatos. Oh, nice. Nice.
Ooh.
Number one, am I the only one who wants to hear System of a Down do an English version of What Up People? I only ask this because I find that SOAD and Maximum the Hormone are very similar to each other, with their death metal growling, fast-paced singing, and frenetic compositions. And as I looked up the lyrics to the second Death Note opening, I feel it would translate well into English, especially with SOAD style of music. That sounds like an interesting idea.
Yeah, I can see it. Or hear it, I guess.
Two, have you ever read the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror anthology comic book with the Eisner Award-winning, yes, I'm dead fucking serious, Death Note parody?
No, I've not. I haven't seen, I think I've read one of the Simpsons comics, like omnibuses, back in like 94, and that's all I touched of the Simpsons comic books.
Question three, have you ever watched The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy? Yes.
I watched a bit. I also remember when it was Grim and Evil, and there was the bear, and then they were just like, no one likes the bear, fuck it.
Much the successful and memorable kind of cartoon.
I was never a huge fan of Billy and Mandy, though. Never struck me particularly.
Fred Burger. I don't know why that was so effective, but it was. Question four, is Death 13 the Freddy Krueger of JoJo, and if he is he the most underrated stand in all of Stardust Crusaders?
I mean, yes, he is the Freddy Krueger. He had the exact same power set, basically. He attacks you in your dreams. Is he the most underrated? He's definitely on there. I think the issue is that his range is limited. It's not like Freddy Krueger where, like, he'll follow you wherever you go. I think the baby had to be in a certain proximity of you for the stand to take effect. And it seemed to be a little bit easier to figure out what was going on, too. Because actually, once you found, like, if you survived the night, which wasn't all that hard, considering, once you realize, like, hey, this baby's the stand user, you can just beat the shit out of it. I mean, it wasn't actually a baby, but still. okay. So questions here from Knopf. Dear Rollo T, who suddenly gets a twisted grin on his face and reveals that he was evil this whole time, then slicks his hair back like his eyes and holds up a glass of brandy like he's a Bond villain. And why, ruler, wait, where'd you get that glass? It's bigger than your hand. You're in prison and the guard is right there watching. Where were you keeping it? And how'd you get it into the visitor area? That is a Phoenix Wright reference to the fact that there's a character reveals he's the villain, and like he reveals this to you in the detention cell, like meeting area. So he's just in front of a guard, whipping his hair back, pouring out a glass of brandy, and revealing his evil plans to you. I fucking love the Phoenix Wright games. I've been trying to start back in the Phoenix Wright series after I started a few years ago, and then started graduate school, which leads into my first Phoenix Wright related questions. In the second game, Miles Edgeworth is on a super luxury first-class airline with its own dining area and fine bar. At the start of the case, there's some turbulence, which, against all odds, causes several bottles of wine to fall over and splatter all over the fine carpeting. And by wine, I mean grape juice. All this red liquid is mistaken for blood, grape juice. Those hundreds of bottles surrounding the snobby alcoholic, grape juice. Because we can't expose pure innocent children to the harmful elements like alcohol in the series that revolves around murder and in a case where the victim is beaten to death. So my first question is, what are some examples of ridiculous censoring that you've always loved, either because they were so unconvincingly bad or because it was so unnecessary with paired with what wasn't censored? The first answer to this is always and forever will be, hey guys, would you like some jelly donuts? Holds out fucking rice cake. Rice ball. That shit's still like to this day. Like,
welcome to America, Mrs. Shari.
What do you, this doesn't even look like a donut. I'm fucking 11. I know this is some bullshit.
Stop her or we'll shoot you with our invisible guns. So we're just going to point at you instead.
A boot on a spring gun is a great one. Just to like the point where I'm like, I don't get, what would it do? You could just throw a boot. It would probably hurt as much. yes, there's some great ones. Side note, I'm taking the Four Kids Double One Piece off the table partially because it's too easy and partially because I'm hoping you guys will find a way to do a bonus podcast on it one day. Maybe. That's not a bad idea. Yeah, I think we got some good ones there. Second Phoenix Wright question. At this point, I've completed three games, and so far I agree with Chris for the best case. But opposite of that, I find the third case of Trials and Tribulations to be the worst in the series. A little background for Nick. The third case in each game is usually the case that doesn't really progress the plot and is usually more outlandish than the rest of the game. I'm basically just asking, in my opinion, what was the worst case in the Phoenix Wright series? Have I passed the lowest point, or do I have something to dread coming up? There's a couple that stick out as being really unenjoyable. Not unenjoyable. I think there's just some that don't work particularly well. I think, honestly, the one I probably hated the most was in Justice for All, which you've already played through, which was where you go back in time to like solve that case. It's basically this whole thing about like, who is Godot? And it's like, I fucking know who he is. He's Armando Estrada. Or not Armando Estrada. That's a fucking WWE wrestler. But Armando, whatever his
Armando
name is.
Armando Alejandro.
Yeah. It's fucking Armando. He looks exactly the fucking same, except his hair's black and not gray. Like, it's fucking obvious who this dude is. I don't know why we're still hanging on to this mystery. And it also involved a lot of really weird stuff about, like, oh, Phoenix was actually Armando Diego. That was it. Like, Phoenix is the culprit in one at one point, and like, he's spirit medium. It got kind of weird. But there's one actually I've been playing in Spirit of Justice, which is the newest game, and it's right in that spot. It's the fourth case, I guess, technically in the game, and it has, like, nothing to do with the plot whatsoever thus far of what I got them. It's the only case you play Athena in, and it feels like a real slight to her character that she got, like, the most fucking worthless case in the game to this point. It's just like, hey, it's a fucking case based around Japanese comedy, which all these jokes are certainly going to translate perfectly well. It's like, no, not so far they haven't. And I know some people don't like Apollo Justice, but I actually have not finished it, so I don't know that one for 100% certain. Final question, kind of. Would you guys be willing / able to do a Patreon bonus Let's Play? And if you would, I've got the perfect kind for you guys to do. T helps, Y play. So basically, you would play the game, and I guess it would be a game I've already played before, and I give you advice and guidance on. However, it's been such a long time since I played the original games that I have trouble remembering things, which, combined with his less than serious and professional attitude, makes his guidance less than competent. I feel this hurts. I do like the idea of doing a Let's Play. I don't know if it would necessarily be something we do as like a Patreon bonus, but potentially it's something like that. I think it's just tough for us to, it's like, hey, Nick, let's find another 4 hours in the month that we can both align our schedules basically Perfectly and do this.
I have been thinking, especially now that I have like a place to myself, that I might get stuff put together and try doing some streaming every now and again. There are some games that I think would be fun to share with people.
I've definitely also wanted to do the Phoenix Wright games, but that's one I definitely need people with me to do, simply because I need people to do other voices, because otherwise that will kill me. I remember doing fucking Fire Emblem, and like half of that game was actual like gameplay that didn't require me to do the voices, but the parts that had me do the voices, by the end of it, I was like, it hurts so much! Why did I make fucking the main characters all really obnoxious voices?
Okay.
Thank you for the questions.
Yes. All right, next comes from Jonah Macon Lefkowitz.
Jonah!
As a heads up, your names are based on out-of-context quotes you two have said on the podcast. Dear Nick, you won't get any STDs, I promise. And Chris, iron her vagina. Someone has to at least look into this. I remember the second one, because that's kind of unforgettable.
Ibitsu is easy to remember, but the first one I cannot recall.
Ibitsu still remains one of my favorite horror month, Halloween month.
It is perfect.
It's beautiful, honestly. After calling me out for sending overly complex questions in June, so 4 months ago, I'm going to make these a bit more straightforward. Please don't hate me, Chris Senpai. Question one. In the recent arc of Fairy Tail, we've had almost a dozen character death fakeouts. Wendy, Gajil, Natsu, Gray twice, Anna, Ichia, Juvia, Makarov, etc. I don't even remember who the fuck Anna is.
She's the super important Aunt Lucy ancestor, Nick. She shows up. She raised all the kids. She has a happy ending.
Why has she become an important character? I've heard many fans feel less invested in anything that happens. Gee. That said, it's not as though character deaths in One Piece end up being real very often either, yet readers seem to respond better. What do you think the difference in writing is that caused these different reactions from readers? Well, they seem to stay dead a lot longer, don't they?
Well, here's the thing. I actually can completely understand this sentiment that goes out there, because we rail on Fairy Tail, or railed on Fairy Tail, I guess, for having a lot of death fakeouts, and One Piece had, for a very long time, just as bad, if not maybe even a worse reputation for it, because characters would like literally like jump into flaming explosions and then like pop out a little bit later like, I'm fine. There is a few things that were differences to this though. One, the ultimate overall quality of writing of One Piece was better. So honestly, Oda kind of earned a little bit of leeway with this by saying, hey, these characters aren't dead, because you're like, well, everything else was pretty good. to Oda's generally try to do something interesting with the characters he keeps alive. Like, not many characters were like, they're just dead and I brought them back to do nothing. There's some cases where that's somewhat of the situation, but generally speaking, if a character was sent, like, looked like they were dead, they came back and had another role in the story or something like that. But I think it really kind of comes down to also you became conditioned as a reader of One Piece that when it looked like a character was dead, you were like, they're not dead. Like, it is not. Yeah. No, Sabo's totally dead. He's dead and never coming back. Totally. Can't think he's never gonna come back, guys. He's dead. He fell into the ocean and everything. He's never gonna come back. You're just like, no, of course that dude's gonna live. Cause fucking Pell survived a nuclear bomb going off in his face, basically. He's fine. One Piece had an issue with it, and it was a legitimate problem, and to a small extent, it's still a little bit of an issue now. It doesn't happen nearly as frequently, and now there's a little bit more of, like, at least a precedent in knowing, like, oh, characters will die in One Piece now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think overall the big thing was that the writing of One Piece as a whole was good enough that you were willing to overlook that. You were willing to give Oda the benefit of the doubt that he's at least going to do this for some other reason than just to pull our heartstrings.
And also, yeah, to the point of, if a character comes back in the one, it's for a reason. Like, was there any reason whatsoever for Anna and Ichiyu to come back from the dead one chapter after it looked like they had sacrificed themselves? No, there was no point to them coming back. They literally did nothing to contribute to the rest of the manga.
If I can also add one last thing, and this may be the more controversial part. Part of it, too, is being a fanboy. As a fan of One Piece, I'm much more willing to overlook the flaws of One Piece that are something I would pick out in another series. I'll fully admit that, because I know some people who aren't as big of a fans of me as One Piece, and that's something they will call out. It's like, yeah, but people die all the time, like, pretend to die all the time in One Piece. It doesn't actually matter. So part of it, too, is just we're big fans of One Piece, and it's easier to just be like, hey, the rest of the series is great. Who cares if Oda sometimes just, like, teases a character dying and then brings it back, you know, not that long after for, you know, no reason or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Question two, what would Osamu's, Asta's, Rei's, and Urza's cooking styles be if they were in Food Wars?
All right. Osamu's is, like, very ordered, like, it's very orderly, it's very, like, restrained, it's very simple and, like, proper and by the book. So it's like a grilled cheese fucking sandwich, and the bread's, like, perfectly square, and it's toasted on the same size. He has no thrills. It is as vanilla as it comes. They were like,
right.
Yeah, they were like, the ingredient was cheese, and you went with grilled cheese. That is some fucking next level basic shit, buddy. But you did it, I guess. Asta's would just be taking whatever the main flavor is supposed to be and throwing as much of that into the dish as possible.
I mean, it would be like, Aizon with his artichokes, and now I'll cut up even more of these artichokes! But he would do that with just every single signature ingredient he would get.
Yeah. So, like, the special ingredient was butter, and he would probably just serve a stick of butter on a plate to them. Rei's would obviously be as hipster as possible, so it would be like whatever flavor of the month is out there, like chia seeds and fucking edamame and all this shit. And it's just everyone's like, this is garbage. I don't know why you decided. Like, it would be some edamame twist on a classic dish, like edamame fucking pretzels. And you're like, this is terrible. Why did you do this, right? The ingredient was salt.
Your baby memories. Your taste buds aren't developed enough without baby memories.
Yeah, when you have your baby memories, you can taste everything on your tongue. You have all the taste buds. Stupid. And Urza would be to cook her food naked or wearing just an apron. And it would be better than everyone else's food because she's Urza.
Because she's Urza.
Yeah.
Or she would unveil her newest suit of armor, which is a skimpy piece of clothing made out of the signature ingredient.
Mm. So it's like bacon thong.
Yeah, something like that.
All right. Hello, Chris. Oh, it's Dornbolt. Wait, hold on a second. Fucking Dornbolt bamps him, fucking grabs him. Hold on a moment. Larios. And Nick. What the fuck?
Fuck you! You could have said My Hero Academia, a Cascremia, fucking lazy piece of shit.
Freeman. Hopefully that jogs you recall those iconic WR moments. I haven't made it back to re-listen to those before I can include them in the last email from June. It's from Ninja X31, by the way. So here are your questions. One, when my re-listen of WMR got to reveal Pika's voice in One Piece, I realized I had never checked out the anime's take on his voice, and when I did, it was even better than I imagined. I was also incredibly saddened to learn that the Toriko anime ended early, thus robbing us of an animated version of Midoriya's full course menu and penultimate chapter. So my question is, are there any scenes in the manga that made you want to check out the manga's anime version of that same scene?
Not really, no.
I'm
too much of a manga purist, sorry.
I don't know if there's... My ass. I don't know if there's a scene as much as, like, sometimes I particularly want to see how fights are animated. And that's something I'll go to check out. I don't know if there's a scene I can think of, though, that I've wanted to see how the anime did it. Although a lot of times I do want to see how the color version of characters end up coming out. That is one thing I do tend to get a little curious on. Question two? Question mark? Nick, did you ever become a great enough accountant that Chris will let you do his taxes as Arina hoped to become a chef worthy of Jirichiro?
And did Mendez ever get that promotion?
I love the idea that without any real, like, significance to it, you have a relationship to me to become good enough to do my taxes in the same level that Arina wants to become a chef to, like, her greatest mentor. Like, we have no, like, extent to that same sort of relationship. Like, I was like, Nick, I have these taxes here. Have you become a worthy enough accountant to be honored of this? You're like, not yes, Chris Senpai.
I must go.
I must go off to study in the land of numbers and calculators. the real question, too. Considering that the manga versions aren't good, so I can't really recommend it, I'm curious of your thoughts. Have either of you ever watched Code Geass, or Gase?
I think it's Geass, actually.
Yes. Alright. And if so, what are your thoughts on it? And that should be a pretty good indicator. I have not seen it. If you have, how do you feel about the announcement of the third season, considering the ending of the second season is one of the best aspects of the series?
Oh, no, I don't know anything about it, except that there's a thing called a Geass that lets you hypnotize people once, and that's about it.
I believe there's a character in it called Rolo. I only know that because at times I remember, like, searching for Rolo online and getting fucking Code Geass art and shit like that back in the day. So, that's literally all I know about the series. I think they wear, like, fancy suits. I don't know. And question three here. If each of the protagonists of the series you regularly recap were to replace the protagonists of every other series, which series would they best fit into and which series would they be the worst in?
Let's see here.
Let's start off the top. We'll do Deku. Deku would fit well into... I think he'd fit well into Black Clover?
That'd basically be roughly the same.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if it would be like Black Clover or One Piece. I guess Black Clover probably fits a little bit better, because One Piece, you'd almost have to be kind of a pirate or whatever.
I think that Asta in One Piece would work out pretty well.
Yes.
I think that he would try and join the Marines, make a big stir as a result, because, he's anti-corruption and arrogance and stuff like that, but he believes in them.
Soma would be great in We Never Learn, because it's just a series with a bunch of really cute girls that he would just make fucking orgasm all the time.
And he would be completely ignorant to them, like, even more so than Yuiga is.
Yuiga, I think, then would be really good in My Hero Academia, because he'd probably, if he doesn't have, like, a good quirk, he would at least fit in with some, like, quirkless helping people station.
Sure. I think Emma would work really well in Dr. Stone.
Yes, absolutely. And I guess, conversely, Senku probably would work the best in The Promised Neverland.
Can you imagine Senku when We Never Learn?
That'd be a weird series. I don't know what he'd do. He just sits around being like, why are you all still so dumb? I explained Edison to you like 4 times. You should know science now.
Oh boy.
I feel like the answer for what one they'd be the worst in for most of the characters would be We Never Learn. Like, Aston, we never learned, is just him screaming about the sister all the time, even though he has, like, four chicks throwing themselves at him daily.
What happened to your pants, Aruka?
I think something must be wrong. Your pants are sliding up your butthole really high. I'll use my magic cutting sword. It must be some kind of devil magic.
No, rest it up!
Oh, God.
Good questions.
This next one comes from Campy. Dear Nick, no anime or manga gets above a 4 out of 5 Freeman. Are you objecting to my scoring system, sir? And Chris, I bathe in the tears of Ruby fans to stay young, handsome, and virile forever, hilarious.
That I do. It's actually on my Tinder profile.
Welcome from the world of tomorrow. Tell me, have you ever wanted to read an over-the-top gore-filled story about a woman who is sex-crazed, womanizing ex-mass murderer that now works with the police to destroy other violent criminals? We've already done Mercy Elago.
I think we'd already done it by the time we got this question, too.
Yeah, I think so.
That we had done it by like a year ago. So yeah, check it out. It's on my YouTube. You can check it out there. Which, by the way, this is somewhat off topic, but just remind me. I've actually divided up, so if you go to the YouTube page, and if you want to just see the recommendation episodes we've done, I've divided those up then into, like, yearly things, so I have, like, all the 2016 recommendations in their own playlist, and all the 2017 recommendations we've done thus far in their own playlist as well. So going forward, if you want to just watch episodes we've done recommendations in, just check those playlists out.
On to the questions. Number one, what is your greatest complaint about your favorite series? And what is your best compliment for your least favorite series? Ooh.
So, it's greatest complaint about my favorite series. I would say, let's say right now I'm saying it's One Piece. Although I don't know if that's 100% the case anymore. But we'll say it's One Piece. My greatest complaint would be that the role that women have in the story is really kind of unfortunate in the grand scheme of things, and it's something that I wish would get better.
I'm going to say right now, My Hero Academia.
Okay.
And too many side characters not getting their chance to shine because too many other side characters are getting introduced, basically.
That is a problem. If I can offer an alternative to my favorite series, I've really been loving the crap out of Haikyuu recently. I think it's just a fantastic sports series. But if I were to give a complaint with that, the art style makes it really hard to remember characters because a lot of characters look really similar.
Gotcha. Best compliment for least favorite series? There are a lot of really good side characters in The Prince of Tennis that would be better suited as main characters.
Oh, do I have to do my least favorite series ever? Air Gear had some sexy ass titties. if I'm going to go with the series right now, I will say I greatly admire the passion in Black Clover. I may not always want it, but I admire it.
I like Zerx in Black Clover.
Yeah.
Question two. As you know, the high school setting is one of the most popular settings in the medium. Why do you believe the setting is so popular? Which setting would you like to see more used? Which setting do you think has the potential to become popularized if used correctly? I think that high school is popular for a number of different reasons. Number one, target demographic. Teenagers can relate to high school setting and high school students being the protagonists. Number two, with older people, it's nostalgic.
Yeah.
I mean, you see a lot of like teen casts over here set in high school, so why not?
Yeah, I was going to say, most shows that you'll see usually have some kind of school element to them over here, things like that. And there's a lot of schools or shows or movies just set in the school. What setting would we like to see get more usage or would have
space?
It's somewhat of a tough question because the more a setting is used, the less original it feels. It starts to become more trite, I guess. I guess maybe urban style, almost kind of like the hip hop urban kind of influence style that you might see in certain series or things like that. Like, I'm trying to think, like, The World Ends With You always had like such a distinct urban, like, youth style to it that always felt so cool and fresh. And I'm surprised we don't have like more series that try to capture that same kind of aspect.
There are a lot of space setting sci-fi series in, like, you know, older shows, you know, like stuff that's popular in the 90s and 80s and going back. But it seems as though in modern days there have not been, you know, anything like that. So I kind of want to get back into that. Question 3. Toei wants to do the one thing that they are best at, marketing popular stuff, but they also want to be lazy about it, as they are often. So, they approached you two to help create their new Semper Sentai show, being the reputable Shueisha mouthpieces you are.
Obviously. Yar, it's be me, Captain Mr. Jump here.
They've asked you to take characters from the currently running Shonen Jump series to create pastiches for their show. Which characters are your main five rangers? What is the theme of their team? What are their colors and mechs? And who is their sixth ranger? Who is their villain? And finally, what is the name of the show?
I feel filtering these kind of questions into their own mailbox and be like, all right, we're going to do three of these each month. Like these really complex questions that we need to like spend time with. Cause I think I can give a good answer for this, but I don't have the time to come up with the full team right now or like the whole theme. Cause like my first thought would be like, all right, since it's pastiche, it's meant to be flattering, like of the trope. So like, I feel like Frankie would be in there. And I feel like you'd maybe want to put, I know there's another like Super Sentai character that I'm just blanking on right now from these sorts of series, but like just the idea that you want to put characters into this that are like fun examples of the medium. It's not like shitting on or anything like that. It's just embracing its awesomeness. And Frankie feels like 100% that. He's all about explosions and like cool robots and shit.
No, I agree with you. It's really an answer that I feel like I want to take more time to answer.
I'm going to put a note on this, Campy. I'm going to put a mark saying like to let me know next time. I'm going to try to.
We'll answer this one next time. Yeah, I promise.
Try to come up with a better answer for that. Okay, questions here from Rogo. Says, Dear Nick, oh god fucking damn it, I had a clever idea for a joke name and now I forgot it. Freeman and Chris, I guess I could just get the person reading this to say Quake Buttock. Instead, it's a funny old-timey insult, Larios. Quake Buttock.
That's amazing.
That is an interesting one. I'm enjoying that. I'm currently reading One Piece over again as I'm doing it, and I'm thinking about how it might be cool if you guys did a spotlight of each arc on One Piece, similar to how you do with JoJo's and Pokemon. Give the depth of material in every arc. I'd love to hear your more detailed thoughts and reactions. That's
an interesting idea. There's definitely a lot there. Mm-hmm. But we'll see.
Maybe that'd be something supplementary we could do. I don't know if it'd be good for the main show, per se, but I think maybe it'd be something extra we could do at some point. Every time I read the Baratie storyline, I completely blank on what Don Creed looks like or his personality. Are there any characters from One Piece that you remember existing but you can remember nothing about?
There's so many of them, so yes.
It's a little harder for me because I have such a fondness for One Piece, and particularly when it comes to like all the stuff up through like Water 7, because I ran One Piece role-playing forums during that time. I had to like, it was kind of like a thing to know as much about as many of these characters as possible. So there's not many characters who completely are like forgettable. There might be minor villains like Siam and Butchie or like Pearl who you're like, I vaguely remember these guys, but then give me a moment and I'll start to remember more details about them. I'm like, oh yeah, Siam would pretend to be like wear a larger shirt than he actually was. So when you'd cut it, you didn't actually hurt him and shit like that. And Butchie got hypnotized to be stronger when he fought and shit like that. These are like minor antagonists from like the East Blue arcs. Simon Butchie were with Kuro's crew. Pearl was like the big shield guy in Krieg's crew.
I remember Pearl.
Yeah.
He had a surfer accent in the dub.
Exactly. I was just about to say that.
I remember Don Krieg was an asshole?
Yes. He was an asshole who had an arsenal of weapons, but he also just got his shit pushed.
He shot poison suction cup darts.
He absolutely did. That made sense, totally. What is also... the second question here. What is the hardest you've ever laughed at One Piece?
Oh.
I don't know if I could say for 100% certain it's the hardest I ever laughed, but one of my favorite jokes in One Piece that still to this day gets me is the scene in Thriller Bark where Luffy sees a zombie coming out of the ground and he just pushes it back down and expects that to work. He's just, like, just straight face pushes the zombie down and he just pops out like, you thought that would work?
A couple of different things. Let's see. For a recent one, I really liked, when Usopp shot the bullet that looked like his own freaked out head, in order to get the same reaction out of, what's her face? The Violet, girl with toyified.
Not Violet. Sugar.
Sugar, yeah. You know, he freaked out the one time and that caused her to go unconscious. And so in order to do the same thing again, he just shot a bullet that looked like his freaked out face. The first time I remember that I laughed really hard at One Piece, I've talked about this a few times, was when they were in Little Garden and the giants are fighting. Luffy gets swallowed by the Brontosaurus or whatever you want to call it. Then while they're fighting, when the giants chops its head off and he falls out of the neck and he just goes, eh?
Eh? What I just remembered too that it makes me laugh is, when they first are going towards Fishman Island, and, I forget who says it, maybe it's like Nami or Usopp, and they're just like, I can't wait, we're gonna see mermaid stuff down there, and Zoro's like, huh, mermaids, and then you see like a thought bubble come up, and you see fucking, Chimney, the woman he met back at Water 7, the grandma who turned out to be a mermaid, and you could see him physically fading her from her memory, and he's like, it'll be cool to see a mermaid for the first time. Like, just forcefully erase that memory from himself.
One of them is also Nami reading the instructions that Usopp has for the climate attack while she's in the middle of battle, and at the end of each of his moments is like, this will make for a great party favor at children's parties.
Similarly, when Nami runs to the train station, Water 7 sees a note from Sanji, and then, like, halfway through, it just becomes a love note to her. It's just like, how much time did you spend on this?
So there's a lot of moments.
Yeah. And just note there at the end, big ups to Chris for liking the Karori versus Jazz Devi fight in D. Greyman. It's one of my favorite fights in manga, too. Well, you have a great taste there, Rogo. Thank you for the questions.
I think that we'll do maybe one or two more.
Yep.
Okay. This is from Cantarell. Hey, old man Nick and Chris the Sea. Interesting.
I think it's, I'm the Stern Ritter and old man Nick. Wasn't that like old man, Yamamoto?
Did they I guess.
Call him old man?
Question one. Would you rather get advice from your future self or give advice to your past self? I think that I would do the latter.
Yeah,
I feel pretty settled right now. I don't feel lost. I have a direction in my life and I can definitely remember points in my past that I didn't. So
I don't have that, but I know past me needs that more. He really needs some help on some things.
Question two, what was the most disappointing manga villain you ever encountered? Either someone that was hyped within the series or that got you excited for on your own, but for whatever reason they fell completely flat.
If it counts to take Hoku, Alexander is probably
the best. Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. More specifically, Yamato.
Yeah. When you're like, wow, they really built up this dude and it's just like he's a power back.
It's my win!
I feel like you could have done so much more with this. And I love power running. But still, this is so fucking dry.
And it turns out he was also an underdog in America. That's not interesting either.
Outside of that, I'm thinking maybe like Nier and Mello are kind of in that range. Xerath really fell flat towards the end where you're like, that was it? Okay. Yeah, this one's, I think, the ones that stick out.
The most powerful of the Espada.
Oh, yeah, Yami.
Well,
or, like, a Stark.
The entire group, like...
oh, yeah.
What? Like, Stark, I thought was going to be super awesome, and then he's just like, oh, no, I beat you.
I mean, Baragon at least got to be like, hey, fuck five of you guys. All right, fine, Hachi finally took me down, but fuck a lot of you. I'm broken as shit. Oh, shit, we don't have time for the other fights.
Aizen just gets tired of Fire Bell and cuts her down himself.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, Yami's like, I'm actually Sarah Espada. Well, what are you gonna do then? I'm going to be beaten off screen.
And it doesn't look like it pushed either of those two guys very hard.
Question three. Which series from the, which character from the series you're currently covering would enjoy a visit to Burning Man the most? Isn't that like a, some sort of an Iron Man challenge thing?
Burning Man? I thought it was a I thought it was a music festival. Isn't it?
I don't know.
Are we both really uncool? Is this what we're just revealing to everybody here? Yeah, it's, wait, no, hold on. Burning Man is an annual gathering at, in the western United States at Black Rock City, a temporary city erected in the Black Rock Desert that doesn't tell me what the fuck it is. I'm assuming it's a dedicated to art and community. It's a festival, but I guess it's just an somewhat unorthodox festival. Doesn't really give me too much more than that. And I don't feel like looking up all that much more on this. I guess who's somebody's like really interested in kind of like cool art and stuff then? I don't know, old craftsman from fucking, Dr. Stone. He would love it. Alright. I think I skipped over mine. There you go. Hey there, Nick, just forgot the words and sing along Freeman. And Chris, all you need to understand is hilarious.
Everything you know is wrong. Black is white, up is down, and short is long.
I don't like Weird Al very much.
Oh, well.
I know. It's like the one, it's like the thing you and I just don't share, unfortunately.
Mm.
Currently, based on how events in the Black 2, White 2 chapter of the Pokemon Adventures are going, it seems like it'll likely finish in this within the year 2018 at the latest. Considering that, I think it would be best if after Black and White chapter you go to X and Y and then combine the Omega Ruby, Alpha Sapphire with the Black 2, White 2. These two parts are shorter than the other parts. What do you think of the plan? Would you go along with it? Based on how the manga is being distributed in America, it's set up in a very linear fashion, so yeah. I'm just going to follow that. That's yeah. how I'm approaching it.
Let's just do one more. Okay. This is from Jack Lebrano. Dear the best Z-grade podcasters on the internet, I recall you always made a big deal of how much Mavis was nothing but lowly material in Fairy Tale, but why is it that you have no problem with Elaine and her relationship with Bon, a 40-year-old man dating someone who looks like they're 7, would be a lot creepier by comparison, wouldn't it? Interesting.
Elaine was a character in the series from essentially the start. As soon as Bond was introduced, like not that long after we found out about the kind of the story with Elaine and King and everything like that, and was an element of it. Is it a little creepy? I guess, yeah. But it's not anywhere to the same level of Mavis, who was introduced halfway through the series, and it's a series already kind of infamous for introducing characters to just fill in kinks. Like, Elaine doesn't feel as much like a lully bait material as much as Mavis clearly was a lully bait material.
Drawn differently, from different perspectives, part of the story from the get-go, God, Mavis ended up being really important, didn't she?
Gotta read fucking Fairy Tale Zero to know everything that's happening.
Alright. I think that's gonna do it then. For this Q&A episode with the Manga Recap, thank you guys for tuning in. We will have more questions answered next time.
Yes. So, guys, as a quick reminder, we do this once a month. We take your questions, we'll give them answers. So if you have any to send in, just send them over to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Put question somewhere in the title. That lets us know and helps us kind of filter it in and out. But in addition, if you want to answer the question we posed at the beginning of the show, which for this month is, what is one of your favorite techniques in battle manga, or what's the one that sticks out to you the most, send that over. If you want to get your answer read out on air next month, send that email over to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com again, and just make sure you put answer somewhere in the title. You could say October answer, you could say November answer, you could say technique answer. Just make sure answer somewhere in the title, that way it makes it kind of easy to filter them out. And we'll read some of our favorites next month on the episode.
Yeah.
And we're also going to make a note to try to go back to that question from Campy and give another answer for that as well. We're clearing through, Nick. We're almost into, like, the heart of summer.
Oh, what a wonderful time. Summer times.
Yippers. All right, that's going to do it then. Any thoughts you want to have before we finish this?
No, I'm just imagining, like, you know, treating the world like it's summer. You know, go out into the surely blistering warm air right now, wearing sunglasses, shorts, and flip-flops.
I mean, I wore shorts today, but that's because I'm insane. And now my feet are cold. Goodbye, everybody.